Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 319 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. Send you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
All right, we got a long, hard show tonight, and we're going to get through it very, very quickly. We got reviews for Guardians, Fast and the Furious, Get Out, Live by Night, Ben-Hur, and Adam Sandler's latest, along with a bunch of others. Trailers for The Last Jedi, The New Thor, Ryan Reynolds' latest with Samuel L. Jackson, and the highly anticipated Stephen King adaption. Say that word. Roads. Is it adaptation or adaption? I'm never sure.
I guess. Adaption? I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a good question.
let's ask people smarter than us out there. So if you know, hit us up on the Facebook page. But regardless, it's the Stephen King It coming to the big screen, and highly excited for that. We'll get into that later. First, let's start it off with a little bit of trivia. This one is going to get tied in to a review you have later for the Chips film. Yeah, because you saw Chips. That film that was out for about, what, 7 showings? And then went away, the Dax Shepard comedy?
It was like out for 2 weeks, wasn't it?
Is it a full 14 days in theaters?
Okay, that's more than I thought.
Such a minor entry, too. I'm surprised
Warner Brothers got behind that, in all honesty. But I was a big fan of the original show. Mm-hmm. And on a personal note, my mom, about a year and a half ago, won a car at an Indian casino here in California from Eric Estrada, personally, who hit on my sister, by the way. My sister didn't know who he was and texted me and said, some old guy in a bad toupee keeps hitting on me, and sent me a picture.
Estrada. So Ponch was still active just recently, but he was threatening to leave and eventually left the television show in season 5,
and they replaced him with the most famous male athlete on the planet at that time. Do you know who his replacement was in season 5 for a full season?
O.J. Simpson.
That would be a good guess, but it would actually be...
I don't know who it is. I never watched it.
It's not that far off, actually, when I give you the answer here. Right. It's Bruce Jenner.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah, a lot of people...
I never saw Chips once. Well, that's not true. I've seen a little bit of it here and there, but I never watched the show, so...
Well, you're not like you're missing a good show. It's like Dukes of Hazzard. It's painful to get through nowadays. But for some reason, we were enthralled by this and Different Strokes, and times have changed greatly. But we'll get into your review of that later. But a little odd trivia there for you. Let's get into
just random news here.
You sent me an article last week about Kurt Russell's envision for a 1980s shared universe of characters that would include all the big guys from the Expendables franchise, plus himself as Snake Plissken, everybody doing their most famous roles. Is that what his whole thing was?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was like, Schwarzenegger would be the Terminator, Stallone would be Rambo. I don't know, it sounded weird, but also cool at the same time, but obviously something that didn't seem like they would have been able to pull off back then.
It would have had to have some sort of like time traveling element, like that article pointed out, because there's a sci-fi element to the Russell and the Schwarzenegger characters. I don't know who Chuck Norris would have been. They wanted him in there, obviously, as well.
Yeah, but who? I mean, what movie would you make? It would be so ridiculous. I don't know.
It's a good idea for a comic book.
Yeah, it's a great idea for like a comic book. That'd be fine. But yeah, as a movie, I don't know, it might be too weird, too odd.
Do you think that's why he never joined the Expendables cast? Because there was always rumors that he was going to join. He seemed like he would have been a natural fit given his history with everybody involved. Mm-hmm. And yet he never did get involved. I think he was a little bit either preoccupied with the Fast and Furious and committed to that already, or is it a fact just didn't want to be involved with this? Yeah, you know what I mean? They didn't like his ideas. He's like, we already tried that once. You guys didn't commit. I'm not doing this.
Well, I don't think he ever pitched it to any of these guys. Right. He said he pitched it to, he mentioned it is really what he said to someone somewhere. So who knows who the hell he said it to. And it sounded like more of a passing idea than anything he actually worked on.
I got the impression that he had mentioned a couple of the guys and they didn't want anything. Because he did really in the mid-90s, he was developing a lot of those things he was in. I believe he was had a hand in Escape from L.A., which was not very good. And Soldier, he over... Mm-hmm. You know, I think he overly gets involved maybe sometimes in projects, too. I mean, the worst of the worst is 3,000 Miles to Graceland, and you expect it to be good because it's Kurt Russell and Kevin Costner. It somehow is a fucking terrible movie.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Let's talk about Dwayne Johnson and Vin Diesel here for a second. Fast and Furious is out. By this time, it has now made, as we record this, like $1.2 billion, which is all anybody talks about, by the way. Nobody talks about how fucking bad or good the movie is. It's just the amount of money it makes, and nobody really gives a shit. I don't know why we're all so obsessed with box office figures. I mean, honestly, if I got to cut back from that, it'd be great.
I mean, it's a popularity meter, really.
Yeah, it's a race.
I mean, I think that's the only real reason anyone's interested in it, especially with something like Fast and Furious, right?
I just think that it's
clearly super popular.
That the supposed beef between Johnson and Diesel may have been for real.
It's so fake, and even if it's not fake, then they. It was. I never believed that it was that real.
I think that there may have been some bad blood there. I really do. I think that this fact that he has, I don't want to say underpromoted it, but Johnson seems to have focused his efforts on Baywatch in most of his posts. I mean, he's a very large social media following. Maybe that's also because that's the movie that needs the attention, and Fast and Furious kind of runs itself. I don't know, but he's also posting very positive things about Jason Statham. Once again, it could all be promotional stuff because they're spitting that off. I don't know. It just seems like it may be real, and they're trying to appease Johnson, not have him leave the franchise entirely, but he probably won't come back for another one of these in the canon, if you will, and not the spinoff series they're talking about. Do we give a shit, though, honestly? Not really.
No, I no longer care about Fast and Furious. I gave up a couple movies ago, and I'm done.
Yeah, checked out. We'll get into that review later as really? Well. Let's talk.
Go ahead.
Briefly here, Will Smith, who was out of the Dumbo movie, is now Genie in Aladdin, right? Directed by Guy Ritchie. Yeah.
It's so weird. This movie is going to be terrible.
You think so?
Yeah.
Why? They're recording Kevin Hart before Will Smith. It's what they're going for. Why not get, you know, one of the best in the business?
Will Smith is Genie?
As opposed to, I mean, really? Who does it nowadays? You can't do the Robin Williams thing.
No one does it. I don't make the movie. This is a terrible idea. I think this is going to be one of the ones that doesn't make it so much. The Lion King, I think, will be a smash hit. This one, they're going to have some problems with.
You think so?
I don't think you just take every old Disney movie and turn it into a movie, into a live action film, and it's going to be good. I don't think that's the guarantee there at all. And yeah, without Robin Williams doing this,
the property itself, that's
damn near. I mean, he is Genie, you know. So exactly. If you're going to replace him, and plus with someone like Will Smith, who is not even close to Robin Williams, right? I'm not even talking about like a level of goodness, but just not. It's just so totally a different person, right? So now you're going to go in a completely different direction, which means now you're not really remaking it, or you're not really casting it in the same mold as they have with the past ones. And plus the director, I mean, it's going to be a terrible movie.
Yeah, I can't imagine that this all comes to fruition, because right now it just seems so outlandish with the shit that they're talking about and the way they're going to do this. And I get just images of Kazam with Will Smith walking around as Genie. Right? But yeah, obviously it's going to be a lot more polished than that. When do they get around to doing The Little Mermaid? When is that come about? Because that might be the one that they should really focus their attention on right now.
Yeah, that would be, I would think, a bigger movie than Aladdin.
Yeah. Well, no, because Aladdin was the bigger hit maybe at the box office.
Not anymore. I mean, I really think that if you came out with both those this year, Little Mermaid would outgross Aladdin.
Well, I think it easily has been more nostalgia factor right now, outside of the Robin Williams
I think it
Genie.
Is, I think it's a more remember. Well, it clearly has the female audience, which would really come out and see something like that. Look what Beauty and the Beast just did. So
which just became the highest grossing PG film of all time. Strange. I thought there was more PG movies, but I guess everything is PG-13. The Star Wars movies and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So let's move on. Let's get a little this or that. We're only going to do a small version of it because we have so many reviews and so many trailers to talk about this show. But
oh, boy.
Yeah, so we got 4 rounds, 8 competition, I guess. So 8 contestants. And you're going to rattle off in fast fashion your preference of the two. And then we'll go back one by one and go over together. All right.
Do it.
Multiplicity or Being John Malkovich?
Being John Malkovich.
Moon or Sunshine?
Moon.
All right, this one's weird. Bill Pullman or Bill Paxton?
Fuck.
They're not Pullman? The same person.
Yeah, right? They are, really. I'll pick the Pullman half.
All right. And Deadpool or Green Lantern?
Well, Deadpool.
Yeah, but we'll get into these. Let's go to talk about this. Multiplicity and Being John Malkovich, you said Malkovich, which is the right answer, of course, but Multiplicity isn't.
There's a right answer?
I think that's for sure the right answer of these two because it's just a better film.
It's a movie. You know, Multiplicity, I feel like, is more of an idea, and it doesn't flow very smoothly in some parts.
Yeah, it's a bit stuck. It's long for comedy, too. I think I rattled off this to you that I did not enjoy my DVD that is pan and scan still. How did you get a pan and scan DVD?
I don't think you can get this movie in non-pan and scan.
It's a weird thing they got going on.
Unless maybe you
can
buy it. Maybe you could buy like an HD version of it. But you can't. There's no Blu-ray.
Yeah, they buried this for some reason. And watching this, you know, I know you saw The Founder. We're going to talk about that on our next episode because I'm going to catch up with that. But I watched Clean and Sober recently. I watched Multiplicity in the same week. And just the guy's range, it's just –
He's so good.
He is so fucking good. And this is before he was – I mean, Clean and Sober is a glimpse of the actor he would – you know, he's your guard.
He's very much like a Tom Hanks to me. Like he commands the screen but in a way – he's like an everyman. He's
it's
like,
effortless, but it's what I would say.
Yeah, but he commands the screen, but without any muscle, right? He doesn't like muscle you into like liking him or have to do really much of anything other than just be himself. It's very weird. It's just, I guess, a natural talent. It's really is what it is.
Arguably the best actor to ever play Batman. Maybe not the best Batman movies, but the best actor. I know Christian Bale gets a lot of fans.
Christian
out
Bale
there.
Is really good, but
he is. But I think Keaton's range for doing comedy and doing the serious stuff. I mean, the iconic.
It's
character.
Unfortunately his Batman movie is not written very well.
Yeah, that's exactly. Well, and it's also a stiff suit and things. You know, it's not. He's
yeah,
victim
I'm okay
of
with
that.
The stiff suit and stuff, but really the dialogue's so cheesy and stuff, which I love about it. But it still is. It doesn't lend you to think like, oh, what a great actor.
Yeah, we're talking Mr. Mom and we're talking Birdman and you're talking all these things in between. It's just, it's a career full of, we should, you know, do a retrospective on his career at some point. All right, let's do Moon versus Sunshine here. Two
outer space movies.
Yeah, but you know what Duncan, I can't think of his name there.
Sure.
And Danny Boyle, obviously. I think Sunshine should be seen. Is both, you, which one did you pick, by the way?
I picked Moon, but.
I go Sunshine on this one.
Yeah, I mean, if you want action, then I would say Sunshine. But if you want story and acting, I would pick Moon. I mean, Sam Rockwell just, I feel like, is one of the most underrated actors out there right now. He's so great in Moon. And I just can't say the same thing for, like, Sunshine. You know, I mean, Cillian Murphy's good and all, and I really can't remember who else is in that movie.
Well, Chris Evans is in that movie.
That's right.
People.
See, I don't remember because I don't think it's that... That movie's not about the performance as much as it is about...
The music is being used
well,
in every trailer.
The music's beautiful. I mean, that's what I mean. Like, action-wise, yes, Sunshine all the way. But if you want something that's more of like cerebral, even though Sunshine tries to be that, it doesn't really hit it for me.
Well, Moon's an actor's piece. It's the one man on an island, if you will. It just happens to be the moon.
And a mystery, yeah.
And a mystery, yeah. It's very good... Duncan Jones. Thank
Duncan
you.
Jones, yes.
But yeah, Sunshine for me on this one. Danny Boyle's underappreciated work, I think, on that. It does a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay, next we have Bill Pullman or Bill Paxton. And you went the Pullman, huh?
I went Pullman. I don't know.
You took the president from Independence Day.
They're pretty similar.
Extremely similar.
Which is weird because, yeah.
I'm going to go Bill Paxton, P. And not just because of the nostalgia factor, but just because there's more movies that I like Bill Paxton in than Bill Pullman. I mean, he'll always be Spaceballs and Independence Day. Mm-hmm. But I mean, this guy, I watched him recently. I watched Twister, which was just fucking horrendous. Mm-hmm. It's his age terribly. I never liked Twister from the day I saw it to today. But Paxton somehow gets through it, and you just think, that's perfect casting right there. And he pops up in the most random movies. I was watching some random Brian Dennehy movie called Last of the Finest. He pops up in that. I'm watching Streets of Fire. He pops up as a bartender. The guy is, I mean, Trespass, I'm watching. He's one of the firefighters.
Yeah. He was for a while. He was just in stuff, yeah.
I just like the workman ethic of both these guys, and they're vaguely familiar.
Both. Well, they both have the weird smiles that are, I don't really know how to explain it. They have weird smiles, though, don't they?
And neither of them would you consider, like, great masters of their craft, but somehow have
very likable, though.
Long careers, yeah. Okay, next we got Deadpool or Green Lantern, the Ryan Reynolds films. Of course, the right answer is Deadpool. You said this. But doesn't it make you kind of appreciate Green Lantern a little bit? As I just rewatched Deadpool, and I just thought, Green Lantern's not as bad as everybody says it is.
You know what, though? But you have to admit that on first viewing, when I saw it in theaters, and when you saw it in theaters, we both agreed it was a big pile of shit. But I tell you, I own the damn thing on Blu-ray because I actually really like it on home video. It
plays better.
Fucking fantastic. Yeah, no, it really is just a fun little flick. Yeah, and I'd watch a sequel at this point.
As for Deadpool, I watched it just go around with the subtitles.
So many jokes that I didn't even pick up on because he's speaking so fast. And I mean, watch Deadpool again with the subtitles on. Do yourself a favor and pick up all the nuances and stuff. It's worth it. That's a very, very good movie that I think anybody enjoys. Can't wait for that sequel. Hey, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with 10 reviews of new films.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
He brings the popcorn. She brings the roses. Subject Cinema, a tasty new film topic each week with a side order of film reviews.
Yum.
T.C. Kirkham.
Ba-dum-ching.
Kim Brown.
What?
Over 500,000 listeners, and you could be the next one. SubjectCinema.com.
Real movies for real people.
Who brings roses to the movies?
I don't know, but that sounded like that was
useless.
Theater 3000. I don't know.
Mr. Like Robot? That, yeah.
All right. You saw Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, the new Marvel.
Yeah, the new
dump
one.
Dump truck of cash that they're getting every
volume
day.
Volume Dos. I saw the Espanol version.
Oh, good. In America, of course. It makes it even weirder. What's the review? What's the verdict?
I loved it. I'm surprised at all the naysayers that came out of the woodwork there for this. I thought it was fantastic, just as good as the first. I don't know, James Gunn just nails these characters, you know, and he really writes. He's, I would guess, it's weird to say, but he's the closest thing to Joss Whedon.
Yeah,
it's out there, you know,
for sure.
And I've always thought that. And he, I mean, if you look at like his work on Troma, like Tromeo and Juliet, he's written the best Troma movie.
I'm glad you brought that up.
It's the
best why I root for him, because he comes from the Troma family.
Mm-hmm. But you can see it even in that movie. Like when you watch that movie, it's a real movie. You're like, what the fuck? Why is this a real movie? You know, it's a fucking Troma movie. Of course, it's made like a Troma movie and it's outlandish and ridiculous, but it's a real movie. And that's kind of like, just, I guess, speaks to his talent. But it just, I love the characters, the actors, you know, it's cast fantastically. It's just the right amount of cheese, tongue in cheek, you know, it knows when it's being cheesy. It calls itself on it. It's my kind of movie. It's perfect.
Now, you were telling me off air that you thought Bradley Cooper did some outstanding work.
Yeah, I'd read an article where someone had said that they thought Bradley Cooper's voice talent here as Rocket, the raccoon character, deserves some sort of accolade. You know, I think they were basically saying an Academy nomination. And again, with that in mind, watching this movie, I kind of have to agree because it sounds nothing like Bradley Cooper, and I imagine they use a little bit of voice manipulation here and there, but really, I mean, the inflection just, he really becomes that character. You would never guess it was Bradley Cooper. It's really some great voice work.
Is it better than the first?
No, it's very similar to the first. I mean, I would say I got as much out of this as the first. It's a great sequel. It's a great second one. I'll name a movie and I'll tell you, Star Trek Beyond.
Ah,
that's what this is very much like. It starts out in a very similar way, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy, they have to save the galaxy, you know, but they're being paid to do it, this and that. They get themselves in trouble, blah, blah, blah. And then boom, he meets his dad. The movie really starts, you know, it's very much like, Star Trek Beyond, you know, they're screwing around. He's bored. And then they get pulled into something.
This is probably why it's being translated, obviously, in every language in the world, and it's a huge hit across the globe. These characters, which were minor characters, to say the least, have now become highly visible. And Gunn himself says he's going to do one more, then walk away. What do you think? Do these guys have another movie in them, or do they stop? Should they stop now?
No, make more. Keep making them. I would far rather watch this over and over again than Fast and Furious, which is just, which we'll get into. Why don't you just tell us about it? Because it's fantastic, I'm sure.
Oh, Fast and the Furious Part 8. In disclaimer, I saw this in the D-Box seating, which is the motion seatings, which
I saw Guardians of the Galaxy in 4D, man.
Oh, well, did raccoons run out and run across the seats?
I got a bunch of raccoon pubes in my face.
So did you get the motion seats too?
Yeah, they have the motion seats. They got leg ticklers. They got smoke. They got lights. They got, mist and things that bump you in the butt.
We got to pay extra for that. But
you position yourself right, you get, it feels good.
Do you find it a distraction?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go back. It's not the best theater.
I don't mind the seats, especially when
I would go to a D-Box.
But the problem with it is that when you're watching something like the Fast and the Furious 8, mm-hmm. which is your eighth go-around, and you know it's going to be a long movie, and you know, like you said, okay, now the movie can really start in earnest, and we're 30 minutes in, 35 minutes in at this point. This is a 2-hour and 20-minute debacle, which I think Guardians is too. But it's just, by the end of it, you know, what can you say about the movie? It's just exactly what you come to expect.
Right.
Nothing more.
But that doesn't sound good. Like, what do you expected not good then? Because that's what I would expect at this point.
Cinema at this point. It literally is
dog shit.
McDonald's of cinema. It's, as it's happening, you are slightly enjoy some of it, mm-hmm. but then you're already like, why am I doing this again? I swore these off years ago, but the seats itself moving around, you start realizing how long these fucking movies are.
Are they playing Guardians of the Galaxy and D-Box up by you? You should really see Guardians with moving seats because it is fucking incredible. I mean, that's the best part of that whole thing. There's a ton of spaceship flying things.
Okay. Well, that might be worth it.
So the 4D was really good with the moving seats with that. But
we're still talking gimmicks, and without the gimmicks, Guardians would hold up and Fate of the Furious would not.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. Now let's talk about a movie that I think is on my – well, I know is on my best of the year list, and that's Get Out. I think this was one of the smartest, most interesting, and stayed in my mind for days after. What did you think of Get Out?
Well, not to hurt anyone's feelings, but I was a little let down.
Really?
Yeah, this movie's extremely slow to start, and really, I'm waiting for the whole movie just for the end of it. And the whole first two-thirds of this movie, I just thought I was bored.
Wow, you're a horror fan. I thought you would get into this one.
It wasn't scary, and it wasn't thrilling. It wasn't suspenseful. It had small moments of weirdness. We were like, oh, that's weird. And then nothing would happen. Nothing would ever come of it because this movie is so focused on that one payoff, you know, and then there's actually three payoffs at the end. Right.
Right.
Kind of leading off of the big one. But it's so focused on that, that it doesn't pull anything else into it. It just doesn't have any time or energy, I guess, to do anything else. And if it can't hit that too soon, right, or else it's over. So I don't know, it took too long to get there.
So you didn't hate it, but you weren't all that amused by it. You weren't that blown away by it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good movie. I don't have a problem with it. I just thought that it wasn't, I don't know, like you just gave it a glowing review, but I would ask you then what, like, not talking about the ending, which is awesome, but just the, you know, the first half of this movie, does it, like, what does that do for you? Were you scared?
It doesn't do anything until, no, but you know, I was trying to put things together and figure things out, and it was one step ahead of me the entire time, I felt, and then later I realized, okay, this is why she didn't want the cop to see.
Well,
the
I license, kind of figured it out, but it's unfair because you can't figure it out.
Yeah, it doesn't play fair, but that's why you're trying to figure it out.
Well, it so too. Doesn't play fair that once it when it reveals the actual plot twist to you, it has to reinforce it later on.
Yeah, I know. It goes on a little bit long there at the end with his friend trying to find him, and I think some of that humor is not always doesn't land always correctly, but. I really
well, it's so this. Ridiculous after you find out what's going on, right?
Still on my top 10 of the year so far. Hmm. Or maybe my top 5 of the year so far. It's been a bad year. Let's talk about Live by Night, which is technically a 2017 release, but it really is a 2016 release because it had a minor Christmas Day release. It was supposed to be an Oscar hopeful. That did
what
not pan out.
What happened with this movie?
Can you see why?
It is horrendous.
It's not horrendous.
Oh,
come
yes,
on.
It is. You're being way too kind on this. I don't know what you would have liked about it. It's so.
I think you're being way
by
too
the
harsh
numbers.
On it.
Oh, not even close, man. First of all, I just listened to the opening dialogue and the ending dialogue. That really says it all about this movie. Not only that, but how by the books can this movie be? I mean, really? It's like by chance all these things are supposed to have happened.
That's okay. That's
are you
what
kidding
I have.
Me? This movie's
so
terrible. It's written
plot
horribly.
In this movie, there's way too much plot going on in this movie. The first 30 minutes contains so much exposition,
and everything has to have a turn to it. And the turns are fucking obvious, so obvious that, in fact, it's surprising that they actually go there. And you think, oh my god, why
I know.
The
I can't,
fuck
I can't defend
would you
that.
Do that?
You're right. But you know what it has?
But that's the movie.
It has a certain style. It looks like it was trimmed down from a much longer running time. I think this movie could have
used. Oh, for sure. The voiceovers at the beginning and end are just, to me, signal, we have an issue here.
Not only that, there's a lot of things that are glossed over. There's some situations that he gets out of that you're not totally sure on the particulars of how that worked out, why that's going on, why that character is to be introduced now and has this little story that – or why he keeps mentioning this. And I kept feeling that it kept making some passes at being a better movie, and it just never –
And then it would let you down.
It just never established that. But
I agree
with
you.
I did outright hate it.
I loved the shootout in the end. Not the very end, but the hotel.
Right.
I thought that was cool.
That's a great set piece, yeah.
You know, and that was – it was neat. You know, I like the idea, the camaraderie and him getting his guys together, you know, and that. And, like, before he didn't have anything. But, I mean, fuck. I'm just talking about this. That's two-thirds – that's almost the end of the movie. And you know how far you had to go just to get there? I mean, good Lord. I don't know, man.
Once
I really
again,
think this is overwritten, overproduced, overdirected, overacted in some places.
If I can compare it to anything, it reminds me of – I want to say Once Upon a Time in America, which is a Sergio Leone film, but not the beautiful classic that in its current form of 225, the amount of running time that's minutes, but that truncated version that they released that was like 2 hours and 5 minutes that Warner Brothers did back in 1984, probably the same thing that they did to Affleck here. If this was 3 hours, yes, it might be a long bore, but it might be something overlooked and beautiful along the lines of The Postman, because there is things in here that
even.
You could see that there might be passages that really would have worked had they given time
it's
to breathe.
It's just written too by the books, too by the numbers for me.
There isn't
this
a cliche
book,
left unturned, I will say that.
But it's too much for me. I mean, when it does that over and over again, and those are big payoffs and stuff, and you just think, holy shit, are you kidding me? Like, I could have written, like a 5-year-old could have written this. Like, that's how poorly planned out the whole thing was. And I'm not even just talking about, like, it not making sense. But the stuff that does make sense is just not, like, plot point-wise. I don't know. Decisions were not made that I like.
Yeah, I don't know if it was rushed to get done between Justice League and
what's
Batman.
What's a book, right?
Yeah, it is.
It is, right? And I've never read the book, so I don't know how much, you know, how much do you blame on the book?
Well, judging by Affleck's previous work, which one of was adaptation, or two of his previous work, films have been an adaptation of the same author's books, I got to feel that it's probably Affleck's or Warner Brothers' fault here. And somebody did something here, because this feels like a cocktail that was not made right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a very successful film, in my opinion, something that was on my top, maybe I think my second favorite film of last year, La La Land. And I felt crazy when I told you this, but did you like it?
Yeah, it's basically an awesome movie.
I mean, it's fantastic.
It's really, really good. It's really heartbreaking at the end. And I don't know that it supports the ending very well or even earns it. But I will say it's a beautiful ending, even though it's heartbreaking. And I really did like the movie, yeah. The music is great. It sticks in your head. It's shot so fucking beautifully. Like, did deserve that award for sure.
Do you think that, or how long did it take before you realized that you were into it? Because for me, I was watching it.
I was watching it.
Really? Because it started off to me and they got out of their car and started singing and dancing. I thought, oh, this is going to be long. But by the end of that song,
really,
that's
such a good song. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. By the end of the song, I thought, okay, I'm ready to roll here. And, you know, didn't it make you creatively inspired in a lot of ways too? And just the loneliness of
yes, exactly.
Being
and
creative.
It's written so well, man. I mean, the whole, just if you were to take like one, just a simple little thing out of it, like the talking over the music, right? When he tells her basically, like with jazz, like, you know, it's so good you can't talk over it. And they use that throughout the movie of them talking over the music, right? Like she can't talk over the, or when she's at the party and or the dinner or whatever, and people are talking, but she can't hear them over the music. So she realizes she should be with him. When they have the fight, they're listening to jazz, but they're fighting over the music. They can talk over it then because they're fighting. Like that kind of stuff's throughout the movie. And that's just, to me, like, those are the little brilliant, I don't know, things.
Well, I mean, even the nods to Casablanca, I mean, you're talking about the ending there, not to give things away, but, they make a visual
sure.
one.
And throughout the movie. Yeah. Right.
And
nods to other movies. Yes.
How fucking talented are they?
And
I love
the idea of the old style with the new, you know, like it takes place now, but it's clearly
1940s
from the heyday of musicals, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, post World War II boom era,
and they do it so perfectly. You don't even
it's seamless.
You didn't even really realize it, you know. And there are parts that to me that I don't like musicals generally, because like I don't like when they go well, like in this movie where he's walking her to her car. And they stop at the bench, you know, and then they do a little dance and stuff.
Because
I hate that kind of shit, but it's so fucking good in this movie.
Because it's supported by
the
story.
So good. Then the whole, the planetarium shit, I would hate that in any other musical. Beautiful in this. So this was...
Well, even the montage of him, you know, the kind of Star is Born montage where he goes into the Fame and becomes a boy bander or whatever it may be.
Right.
You know, there, you're like, that kind of stuff is done so well that the second the movie starts, though, you just feel like you're in the hands of a master, somebody that clearly knows what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And that every shot is composed. Everything is there for a reason. I mean, you picked up on things I didn't even pick up on clearly about, you know, with the talking over music. And, you know, I picked up
on... Yeah, I'm
going
to have to watch this movie again because I bet there's more of that in there.
Oh, I'm sure there is. I mean, but, you know, just the loneliness of being in L.A. and giving up things and the quitting and all that stuff. But, like, the intoxication of being around creative people as well, you know, and how creative people can't...
Right.
Really live together, and they're both.
Yeah, that to me though, they didn't show that well enough in this, right?
It landed a little late in the story for me, but it's still there.
Even then, but it wasn't powerful enough. I mean, there's no reason why he couldn't go with her, and still be making a name for himself, right? I just don't see why they couldn't be together and get what they want, especially in a movie, you know, in a made up world. You really kind of have to sell that a little bit more than what they did. They just kind of said, we can't do it.
At that point, the goodwill has built up so much if you're going
but
with this
movie.
But
the payoff to that is so, you have to admit,
it's
one of the...
It's great.
A fantastic sequence at the end of this movie. It's just one of those sequences where you're just like, wow. And then to use that same melody over and over again and have it be as impactful and as powerful, maybe even more powerful as the movie goes along, it's pretty incredible.
It becomes, at first it's dreamy, and then it becomes kind of hopeful, and then it becomes downright sad and melancholy. And I just think that the music in that, for being all original songs, it surprises me how much I like that. Because typically I don't like musicals that even have cemented songs that are, you know, like award-winning and are, you know, in the Great America Songbook or whatever it may be, you know, things that are outside of Grease or this. You know, I'm not a Les Mis fan or things like that, or Phantom even. I've seen these things, you know, they're in San Francisco.
I like Phantom,
here.
But I mean, I'm not, it's like I'm going to listen to Phantom. But this is actually music I could listen to, right? This is music that you can just go about humming and find yourself like replaying in your head and stuff during the day. It's just,
it just made me intoxicated on cinema.
Yeah.
That's the best way I can say it.
That's a good way.
And then a movie that stole that thunder right away was Ben-Hur, the new reboot.
Ben-Hur over?
Did you ever see the original Ben-Hur?
Yeah.
I don't recall.
Is this one better?
Well, let's talk about this. Do you recall it being overly, I don't want to say biblical because the story is a biblical story, but do you recall, did it have scenes of Jesus of Nazareth on the cross and being crucified?
I think so.
Did it? I don't recall that at all.
You might have to look that up, but I kind of think.
Okay, then maybe that's, maybe I'm way off base here, but I just felt like this was, you know, obviously produced by Mark Burnett and Rhona Downey and they're the people behind a lot of these biblical epics, including the Bible, which was the big TV movie. And there's nothing wrong with this movie. In fact, it's actually a very well done movie. It's directed nicely. It goes about its pace.
There's a crucifixion scene in the Heston one.
Well, then this is right on. This is a pretty faithful remake then, and it's at times a thrilling remake because it has that chariot sequence, which is still a big set piece. And the director, this Russian cat, Timur, I'm not even say his last name, the guy who did Wanted and American Vampire
Hunter.
Don't
even try.
Abraham Lincoln, yeah. But this cat films this thing nicely, gives it a good energy. The movie goes about its duties well and isn't groundbreaking, but isn't insulting. It's just not, it's not really worth your time if you have anything else to watch. I can't recommend it because it's just it's all for naught. It's just kind of like, okay, so
I say but I have no interest in this.
Yeah, you know, but you know what, but it's better made than Gods of Egypt. It's not going to insult your intelligence like that, Will, or just confound you and be like, what the fuck's going on here? Yeah, I didn't mentally tune out for 20 minutes like that.
No, so this was interesting then?
It's a 2-star movie. I'm just being kind to it.
Okay.
Yeah. Ghost in the Shell. Tell me about this one.
Ghost in the Shell. It just sucks. It just sucks.
Is it worse than Jupiter
Ascending?
They
totally don't get, I thought so, just because Jupiter Ascending is, at least you don't know what's going on. I mean, this movie, all you're doing is, of course, holding it up to the anime, of which it totally doesn't understand what made the anime good. All right, just as we said, this movie is so fixated on being a Hollywood movie that it misses the point of what made the anime so fantastic. And even though it does have scenes from that in it, it goes way off base. It probably goes more into the manga than the anime did. I mean, the smartest thing the anime did was to cut a lot of the shit out that's in the book, which is ridiculous stuff and just stupid, you know. It just has nothing to do with anything. It's just like dumb robot shit, you know, and it's in this movie. It's just like, oh, why? Who cares? They totally take the bad guy here and just make it nothing. I mean, they make this a revenge movie is what they make it, instead of a movie about who, like, what consciousness is. Right? This is a movie where someone was wronged. And that they figure it out. I mean, I'll tell you, I would rather, and have in fact, seen, I can't remember the name of it.
Aeon Flux?
Thank you. You seen exactly what I was going to say. I've seen that more times than this. That at least tries to do more than just be a stupid action movie, even though it fails. But that is a better movie than this.
Whoa.
And that is really sad to say, but it is. And it's not that it's better made. Clearly there's more money in this. you know, the action sequences are better and things. But fuck, watch the anime. The action sequences in the anime are better than either of those movies. But yeah, as far as the movie goes, it just utterly fails, like miserably. It's just not good. It's not fun to watch.
Yeah, it obviously is a big bomb all over the world, and audiences have stayed away for various reasons. And I think the underlying reason is, for everything you've just said, I'm not a fan of the anime or the manga. I will not be seeing this movie.
Oh, you have to be a fan of the anime.
I mean, so good. I'm not a big fan of anime in general. I mean, I saw Akira. I saw this. I think what was the Ninja?
I don't watch
one?
A lot of anime either. Yeah, Ninja Scroll.
That's the one I liked.
Ninja Scroll is pretty good, but it's not as good as Ghost in the Shell as far as writing goes. If you're interested in that, I mean, I guess if you want like the sex stuff, you sure.
Is it the henta? There you go.
That's the good stuff.
Watch a little henta before we went on air.
Monster dicks. Not what I saw. I don't know, but I'm talking about the tentacle dicks. You know.
Hey, that's not mince words. That's what you saw. Sandy Whistler, the new Adam Sandler comedy on Netflix, which we incredibly couldn't believe that it was 131 minutes long.
I didn't make it through this.
Yeah, you only made it through, what, 10 minutes or so?
I made it through 20 minutes, I think, before I turned it off. It was really boring. How did you make it all the way through?
I found it to be slightly charming. I have a somewhat of a guilty pleasure soft spot for this movie. I'm giving a recommendation.
Don't do it, folks.
I'm doing it. I'm being kind.
Because I'm
a retro 90s, 80s junkie, and this was set in there, I just like small little bits that were in there. I mean, some of them are, or most of them are very broad and don't land well, but this one, in the end, won me over. You know what it reminded me of was Broadway Danny Rose, which has been very compared to this. And he even has the Woody Allen kind of shtick going with the glasses. And I didn't find this character nearly as annoying as I found Bobby Boucher and Little Nicky and some of his other quote unquote characters. And
by but the I end liked of it, Little Nicky as a movie way better than this.
I actually like this more.
Ah, you're crazy. This movie is super boring. And I think that, I think a lot of people would agree that it's not
good. I think most people would. I'd say that it's his best that he's come to Netflix with yet, with the Do-Over being a close second and Ridiculous 6 being the outright worst.
Yeah, I think that his Netflix stuff has been a real disappointment in general.
I'm excited that his next film is going to be with Ben Stiller, directed by Noah Baumbach, which sounded very interesting, a drama, and Netflix just picked that up for distribution, so... I mean, love Noah Baumbach's films.
We'll see. I do too, but we'll see. I mean, Netflix's big problem is that they don't have any quality control on their stuff, right? Because it doesn't matter. Like, they get these movies don't have to make money the way the other movies do,
right? Which is why
they can put out any shit they want. Movie,
Handsome, and it's just good luck.
Did you watch it?
No, that to me was worse than Sandy Wex. I couldn't get through that.
It looks terrible, but I do want to start watching. Well, I was just like, fuck, I started watching Sandy Wex there. I get pulled into these things all the time. I do like movies like that, but they're just, these ones are just, I don't know. To me, they just lack that quality. Like, I guess you picked up on it that it had that 90s stuff, because they do feel very 90s, like straight
it's
to video
USA
type
up
stuff. Yeah.
Retro thing for me is basically what it is. And I got the kick out of this one because it acknowledged that. I mean, even just he's walking down the street and like there's billboards for Time Cop and the shadow behind him. I'm just I'm just looking at that and like, oh, somebody threw me through the trouble of redressing that or digitally putting that in, and that's accurate to the time he's supposed
to
be.
So you
were
high when you watched is what you're saying.
Well, obviously, the same fucking Wexler.
I'm just looking at the Time Cop posters and Shadow posters behind him.
To be honest,
there's a movie
on.
They had Time Cop posters behind Ben Hur. That movie is not accurate at all.
I will have you know, though, I did not smoke any weed before I watched The Passion of the Christ, but I've only seen that movie one time, and it was in a theater, and I do not want to see that movie again or go through that experience again. But let's talk about Don't Breathe, which is another, I thought, outstanding, not horror film, but more of a suspenseful.
I'd say a horror movie. I'd say an outright horror movie. But yeah, definitely suspenseful. This Don't Breathe, to me, is what Get Out should have been. You know, this hits all the buttons and the numbers and just, you know, does everything it needs to do to be exciting, scary, suspenseful, horrific at times.
Yes, the turkey baster.
Yeah. So this was just an all out, pretty much a perfect horror movie, really, I would say. And I remember some other movies like Hot Tension or High Tension. I won't try to say the French name. But when that came out, everyone made a big deal about that, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And it's super gory. And they tend to, you know, the more gorier ones tend to get more publicity, I guess, in the horror circle. When something like Don't Breathe should really be at the top of a lot of people's lists, just because it does the suspense right, you know, and it has those characters in there, and you kind of worry. It does so much with these fucking just these few characters where you're like, oh my God, is this guy gonna fucking get killed or not? Is this guy gonna get killed? Oh, he got away. Oh, he's back. What the fuck? Is he gonna get killed? You know, you're just wondering the whole time, like, who the fuck is gonna get killed? What's this guy's deal? Yeah, and then when you find out, of course, it's more horrific. Yeah, I thought it worked better than Get Out, like, all around.
I'll say this for my knock on this. The dog stuff goes on way too long. That dog is Cujo at some point. I was tired of the dog.
But yeah, that was the ridiculous scene with the car and stuff.
Yeah, sequence, if that was cut, it would be an absolute perfect, perfect horror film to me. As it is, it's a near perfect horror slash suspense thriller.
Doesn't that feel like a tack on? Like, oh, it's just not quite long enough. We need to do the ending one more time.
I just felt like it was like somebody, you know.
Saying it wasn't for me. I'm just saying that it feels like we need to add more is what it felt like. And they kind of tacked on, like, they basically did the ending again, you know. It was like, okay.
Yeah, outside of that minor quibble, I think even Stephen Lane perfectly cast as the main guy.
Yeah, the voice, good or bad, you can decide. Creepy,
but interesting. And I like the fact that they kept raising the stakes in an intelligent way, but in a very unsophisticated way too, where you go, okay, that makes
sense. Just little by little, to where finally by the end, I mean, I think the dog scene was really too much. That took me out of it. Or the car where she's fighting
the dog.
That's
what I'm talking about. Yeah,
you know, not having the dog's not a problem, but that scene was too much for me. But but yeah, like you say, the turkey baster, when you get to that point in the movie, you're just so into it that you don't even realize how ridiculous it is.
Yeah, but it's going because everything in it has been given a certain weight and thoughtfulness that it's not insulting your intelligence, which is usually my problem with these kind of movies. When you don't go in there and, you know, right, that kind of people screaming at the screen. And in this, no one made those mistakes because everything was motivated by clear motivations that you could relate to and not by plot mechanics. Okay. Yeah. You saw Why Him, which was a fairly big hit for what it was during the Christmas corridor there. And I didn't get a chance to see this one. I mean, $50 million it made at the box. Outgrossed Assassin's Creed, which was obviously far bigger.
But that's not. It did better than horrible movies. I'll be honest with you. I liked it.
Nothing wrong with that. I've heard good things about it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is it's just nothing special. But there's also just absolutely nothing to dislike about this movie. It's cast great. I think everyone's fantastic in it. It's very funny. My only complaint, again, is that it's just nothing special. It's very by the numbers. And so it kind of feels like nothing necessarily happens.
Is it a Meet the Parents redo, basically?
Kind of. I mean, it's not. I don't know. I wouldn't put it on the same level as that movie. I think that movie is much better, much well written. And this just feels like they show up. You know, he acts like crazy. They act crazy. There's really not enough time spent in this movie together to wind up to do the whole like losing and then getting people back thing that they have to do at the end. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That would have to happen in this movie. And so that feels a little forced and a little bit like, oh, we have to do this now. So we're just going to do it. But other than that, I thought it was funny and I enjoyed it for what it is. I don't think anyone will have hugely high expectations for a movie called Why Him. Especially if you've seen the cover art and stuff. I think you get it.
Yeah, but it won't waste your time. Basically, it's not gonna.
No, it's a nice little quasi Christmas movie, I guess I would say. I love when they take movies that aren't Christmas movies and just make them in Christmas time, and all of a sudden it's a Christmas movie. That's this movie. Gotta love that.
Yeah, because they're coming out during Christmas time, so we gotta have a nod to that. All right, Liz, what's your streaming online pick for this week?
Well, I'm going to say 13 Reasons Why, just because it's freaking awesome. And if you're someone out there who hasn't seen it yet, you should definitely check it out. It's very, very good.
This is the television show on Netflix.
This is Netflix, right? Yes.
Which is getting a lot of heat right now. My pick is also a Netflix, but mine is Sandy Wexler. And I, unlike Trevor, think that this is one of Sandler's more pleasant efforts to be released to Netflix. I think that his last big screen film, which was Pixels, was really overlooked by people for whatever reason. And
that movie's good, but that movie wasn't on Netflix.
No, but that movie itself is better than I thought the last Ghostbusters, and it was very similar in a lot
That's
of ways
true.
To that. Yeah. So I don't know why that didn't get more play.
Yeah, I never even thought to make that connection there, but you're right. We did get a good Ghostbusters, guys. It's called Pixels.
Yeah, that's what I keep telling everybody. No one fucking believes me. Thank you.
And unfortunately, it's an Adam Sandler movie, and a lot of people don't like him, so can't win. He just can't win, you know?
There's no accounting for taste. All right, let's do Trailer Addict.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay. Red alert, shields up. Yes.
My shield's been up since we got on the...
Oh, your shields are down, sir, believe me.
We've been talking.
I've seen behind the Iron Curtain.
I am the wizard. Yes. I am the last, my God.
Are you the last Jedi?
We are the last Jedi here. This is obviously the sequel to the number 8 now in the official canon.
God, it is 8, isn't it?
The problem with this to me, let me get off it. I can't even judge this, like what this movie's going to be, because they sold me on all these previews so far. Rogue One,
right? Isn't it terrible?
That had, you know, nothing to do with the movie. So I don't even trust that this is anything to do with them. I don't even know what this is, but it just looks like I want to live in it. So I don't know what to say here. It looks awesome, but it's not very trustworthy.
Half of it's the fucking music, you know. I'm just going to throw that out there right now. I'm pretty sure they could cut damn near anything together with the Star Wars music, and I'd be like, oh, Star Wars looks good.
But it's also, you know, landscapes during Golden Hour. It's you know, space battles. It's lightsabers. It's all this kind
of
shit.
It just looks fantastic is what it is. I know that it is not going to be. I just know it because I, unlike so many other people, just do not like these Star Wars movies anymore. They're not good. I shouldn't say anymore because I like the other ones.
You like Episode 7 more than you did Rogue One, though. And this is going to be better.
Oh,
than
easily,
Rogue One.
For sure. And so I have so many complaints about these movies. And it's not even because I'm a Star Wars geek. I'm not. Believe me, I'm not.
Well, clearly.
I just don't like these, like, as movies, these aren't very good. Like, I just can't, I don't understand it. How can you fuck this up so much when you have done so much other things to just the extent of, like, the Marvels and how do they, and, you know, and the Pixars and
so what do you think
even
they
their own
kind
animation
of
stuff.
Star
how
Wars?
Do they do this? I guess I have no idea. I don't really understand. I mean, I understand Rogue One was a clusterfuck. You know, the more I looked at that but I can only understand to be a cover up to make people look good. The studio really just took that movie and beat
well,
the
remember,
shit out of it.
The original director of that was Josh Trank, the Fantastic Four director, mm-hmm. who stopped going to set and basically bailed on that. And then Garth Edwards came on, and that whole thing was a major patch job that worked out in their favor. How many times they can do that and get away with it, we'll see. But
apparently a lot, because look at Fast and Furious. You know, I mean, I don't believe anymore that the movies have to be good for people to go see them. So I don't know that there is any want to change course on this, right? I mean, I think they're going to keep just doing what they've been doing.
Well, this trailer,
and of course, I will go see every single one because I'm a fucking idiot. So.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? Yeah, they got my money already. I don't even know why I'm... I mean, I may as well be complaining now, right?
Well, here's a franchise that gets my money that I actually skipped the second Thor film. I loved the first Thor. Thought the second one was pretty much shit. Watched it on DVD or Blu-ray here. You like it? Did I like it? Yeah, but I think it's one of the weaker films in the Marvel canon.
Well, that's fair enough.
And if not the worst. And but, I think this one has all the elements to be one of the fucking best. They are going 1980s neon Flash Gordon here,
this
and I love it.
Fucking amazing looking.
I want to live in it.
Yeah, I mean, I love this trailer. I think the comedy works. I love the idea of him as the fallen god, you know? Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think this looks fucking awesome. And the thing about this is that, again, like with Last Jedi here, but they haven't given away hardly any of the plot. And you really want to see it. But yeah. I have far more faith in this than I do in the Star Wars one. And mainly because this looks like fun. I guess exactly is what I will say. Like, and I like these characters. I really like Thor, and I really like, I don't know who else is in this movie, but I guess the Hulk. But I just like these Marvel universes, really. They're just good. And even though, like, Thor 2, I still like Thor 2. And it's part of the too big of a canon at this point for you to ever fucking go back and watch any of these movies. But I still like Thor 2, and now this looks great.
Yeah, this looks absolutely great. I even love that. You know, I walked past the poster the other day when I was at the theater, and it's just Thor, and then the Rancor part of it. The type print that they're using, the color scheme there, it looks like old Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Remember Bigfoot, the monster truck? I swear to you, it's the same type of outlay like that, and it's just so 80s to me. It reminded me of the Goldbergs. It reminded me of all that kind of stuff.
I think we have a lot of things to give to like Stranger Things and even Guardians of the Galaxy as well to wind up getting Thor Rancor. What is it? Has a Ragnarok?
Rancor.
Rag? No, it's Ragnarok.
With it, I'm saying Rancor. I'm going my own thing.
You spelled it wrong.
Well, that's why I say it. That's how Ragnarok. We say it over here. This household.
Hey, Rancor. All right.
I got your Rancor right here. I think Rancor is a goddamn Star Wars animal. Return of the Jedi. I think it's going to attack Luke. It's a Rancor pit. All right, let's move on and talk about Stephen King's It, which is getting the big screen adaptation. How do you like that? It took me an hour, but I got it.
Hey, you figured it out.
There you go. What do you think? I love this trailer.
I think it's a great adaptation.
Ooh.
hitting back. Yeah, I think this is a fantastic trailer. I think this is everything I want it to be so far. It looks like it's really following the book very closely and doing a better job than the miniseries did. I would like to see some adult stuff now. Yeah, I see the kids. Okay, you got the kids. Do you got the adults?
I feel like
there's two sides to this movie.
Right. I mean, that's basically it's two books in a lot of ways. And I felt like they focused overly on the children in this trailer because of that Stranger Things kind of connection, like you just mentioned before.
That could be true. It does feel that same way. But there are two. I mean, the adult side of this is just as important as the kids stuff. You know.
Yeah, I think it's more important. It's to me it's the horror of the high school reunion in a way gone bad. Of that shared group.
Sure,
secret.
Having to come back and stuff.
Right,
yeah.
And then and having to get together.
I can
with people
see that.
You know, so I hope they don't only focus on the kid stuff because I thought as good as this looked, I was like, I'd like to see what they're doing here is the grown-ups and who they transform into and getting that call and, you know, like where's
it's
the
also
roundup
nice.
Call? Where's that scene at?
It's also nice not to have that and maybe there'll be, or as much a reason as not to show it for me to go see it to experience it firsthand rather than, you know, seeing it in the trailer.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, how long is this movie? Because there's so much.
I hope it's 3 hours and 48 minutes.
I was going to say, in it, there's so much. Like, how? And when you see this trailer and you're like, oh, there's that. This is all the shit that was cut out of the fucking miniseries. Like, if the miniseries couldn't do this, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, even the Dark Tower we're going to be talking about next show and all that kind of stuff. I mean, where are they fitting in all? What happens here? So I feel like it's, you know, 1992 again, and we got Stephen King films coming at us.
Don't they feel, and doesn't this feel like a fucking 90s movie? I love it. And so is The Dark Towers. Oh, I love it. Love it.
Let's talk about The Hitman's Bodyguard, the Ryan Reynolds, Samuel L. Jackson comedy.
I love
it. Comedy. This looks exactly what I want to see.
This looks hysterically fun.
Both these guys. Yeah, it really does. It looks like, it reminded me of when Samuel L. Jackson failed at doing that movie called The Man. Remember that?
Thank you. That is exactly what I was just going to say. I had that queued up in my mind to say the exact same thing. Yes, and they play off the same thing.
Right.
Which is basically themselves, you know. I mean, this is basically making fun of Samuel Jackson and Ryan Reynolds, just as much as that was Eugene Levy and Samuel Jackson. You're right, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought at the whole
time. But this was better.
Yeah, well, because obviously Ryan Reynolds is one of the most underrated comedic minds right now
We'll see if it's better than Taxi, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the one to beat here. That's the bar I'm setting. So I think it'll be a good movie.
Don't pick the low-hanging fruit or anything, huh? Well, it's got Lionsgate and Millennium Films behind it, so we're bound to be disappointed. Yeah. I'm surprised that this trailer actually works, because this might be the best trailer they've ever cut.
That's true. This is definitely not a Lionsgate trailer.
No, there's no false CGI or any like snake or any of that kind of shit going on.
Yeah. No, I thought this was funny, and yeah, it seems to play to everyone's strengths, so...
And typically when you hear that Whitney Houston song and you just think, oh, how pat is this? It works here.
You gotta admit the posters, like their fake poster they did of The Bodyguard.
It's
hysterical with Ryan Reynolds carrying Samuel Jackson.
Yeah, I think Ryan Reynolds has been in obviously a number of comedies, but two have been really overlooked in his career, and I'm gonna name them briefly. One will be Just Friends.
Yes.
I've named that obviously very much.
Love that,
man. But the other is The Change Up with Jason Bateman. I don't think that movie gets enough credit. It's a very funny movie.
It's okay.
You don't think so, huh?
I don't think it's a very good movie.
Do you know what movies recommended to me by girls?
I'm unfunny, but I just...
All the time. Every female in my life I've ever known since it's come out has been like, you haven't seen that movie, you've got to see that movie, so it must be fucking good. It's definitely Maybe.
Yeah, which is a fantastic movie.
Well, there you go. What, are you hanging out with my ex-girlfriends?
No, I just watch movies. Yeah, no. Yeah, that really is a good movie, though.
Is it? Okay, I will check that out, though. Because, I mean, Ryan Reynolds is he's really one of the shining movie stars out there right now. I mean, I would watch a lot of movies he's doing. Would you go see a Ryan Reynolds movie just because he's in it? Is he that big of a star right now? Or does it have to be the right Ryan Reynolds movie? Like,
yeah, it would
Deadpool?
Have to be the right one. I mean, he's already been in some shit that no one's seen.
No, I know. I mean, I'm watching... just the other, last week I watched Criminal and Selfless, and I was like, my God,
yeah,
it's like...
Yeah, there you go. I mean, he's already done stuff that I didn't go see. So, yeah, it's got to be right. He still doesn't get... And again, who's at fault, right, for picking these fucking roles? Is it just what's offered to them, or do they pick this shit? Because, yeah, those two movies, I mean... Selfless and a Criminal. You'd have to wonder what the fuck
they want to work.
What?
You know, I heard Samuel Jackson one time say, "I'm an actor. I want to act. I don't want to sit on my house all, you know, and be on set."
I understand that,
but
I mean, there's got to be something better out there, especially for someone as charismatic as Reynolds. Although to be fair, he's ruined plenty of movies all on his own. So,
yeah. All right, well, that's going to wrap up episode 319 of the Movie Mavericks podcast. We want to thank you guys for joining us. As usual, you can check out our past podcasts on MovieMavericks.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you may be getting these podcasts from. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Regard, and we are the official Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!
All right, put your dick away.
All right.